The following session is from the 2022 NCHE Thrive Homeschool Conference. For additional recordings, visit nche.com.
Okay, now you can hear. I can heard. I feel heard now. Okay, so my name is Julia Nall, although it's pronounced Julie. My parents named me Julia, and then they called me Julie. And that has been a confusion for 60 years. So I'm a lover of Jesus. I'm married to the best man in the world, hands down, no competition. We've been married for 30 years as of this next Tuesday. I'm a mom of five, two biological and three adopted. The pictures of my three adopted are on there. I'm a long time ago nurse, practical nurse, but the only nursing I do anymore is putting Band-Aids on cuts and dealing with my youngest who has severe epilepsy. And if you're in the vending hall, you will see her because she's the one that wears the helmets and she's real easy to see. I have an education degree. I have a master's in religion with the triple focus of Old Testament, counseling, and ministry. I have a blog called Micah 6:8, where I share about life with our three little adoption, and right now about Ukraine. My husband and I own and co-write BiblioPlan, which is a classical history, literature, Charlotte Mason kind of curriculum. I am a teacher of 40 years, so I have been around for a long time. Before I start, I want to take a minute to pray. And because three of my kids come from Ukraine, I want to pray for Ukraine because that's been my goal this summer. Every time I speak is to pray over that country, and I also want to pray for you. So I'm just take a minute. Lord Jesus, I thank you for being present in this room. I thank you for the people that you have drawn here. I thank you that we are together in this as we have kids that have struggles and issues, and I do too. And I just thank you for each of those that you've given to us, for their preciousness, for just how special you made them. God, I just pray that the words that I speak would just be of encouragement today, and that people could come away with even just a small scrap of help. Lord, I pray for Ukraine. I pray for the country. I pray for President Zelensky today. I pray that you would give him wisdom. I pray that you would just give wisdom to all the leaders, that you would just help them discern how best to end this. I pray for the families that we know, the people that we know, our loved ones that are over there. God, I just pray protection. I pray that you would comfort. I pray that you would be present. I pray that as they cry out to you, that they would feel you in a real way right now, Lord. I just pray for that. For it's in Jesus' precious name I pray. Amen. So of my five children, I have encountered a massive mixed bag of learning struggles and special needs. We have faced over the last 27 years ADD, auditory processing disorders, executive function disorder, expressive and receptive language disorder, mental delay, dyslexia, dysgraphia, giftedness, Asperger's, and more. So I know that I have an education degree, and I know that I've taught for 40-plus years, but in complete honesty, it's in the raising and teaching of my own children where I've learned the most. They've been my teachers. The last 27 years have stretched me, have pushed me, and have forced me to learn and grow right alongside my kiddos as I try to figure them out. So Mom and Dad, you're homeschooling your children. You've got it, man. You read every book. You researched everything. You're ready. Some of you even started the planning when your kids were in the womb. Like, baby on board, I'm going to homeschool, and I'm going to start attend. We have people that attend these things before they even have a child. Others were dumped into the deep end in the last couple years because of COVID. But you're ready. You cleaned out your nook. You got a little space in your house. You set up a classroom. You put up a whiteboard because those are important things. You bought arts and crafts supplies. You got everyone their books for the year, the nice, pretty, stacked everything. You're ready to go. You started strong, right? Your first week, everyone was excited. They jumped out of bed ready to get started in this homeschooling thing. You got this, you say. At the end of the week, you reward everyone with root beer floats, popcorn, and a family movie. Homeschooling is a breeze. Week two starts out fine, almost. Child number one melted down when you marked a problem wrong on their math paper. And child number two melted down when you told him to go read for 20 minutes. But you got through the day and you chalked it up to Monday, right? Except by Wednesday, you have had more math meltdowns and child number two is going into reading revolt. On Thursday, no one wants to get out of bed. And by Friday, the reading book has disappeared and the math paper for the day has been shredded into a million pieces. Friday night, the family movie is canceled. And everyone has been sent to bed early, and you are sitting alone, eating a bowl of popcorn and crying into your root beer float. Anybody got that? Okay, maybe it doesn't happen that fast. Okay, maybe not by week two. It might take a week or two, or maybe a month or 3 months, but sometimes our best laid plans don't always go as planned. And so sometimes we end up crying into, can anybody relate to a root beer float? Crying, weeping, yes. If you have a child who is struggling, or a special learner, you can probably relate to even pieces of that. Especially when we begin to realize that when it comes to learning, one size does not fit all. Most curriculum, and I'm a curriculum writer, most curriculum is written for the typical, average, and above average student. And most children are a roller coaster of strengths and weaknesses. If a child is an average or above average in a subject, then the curriculum is usually fine. It may not fit their personality type, or it may not ignite a lot of love for learning, but it's not going to send a child into orbit. They just might not like it. But, you know, that if it's a typical child, they're not usually going to derail. But if you have weaknesses or learning struggles, then they are going to derail on that curriculum unless you do something, unless you put in adaptations. And that is what we're going to talk about, adapting curriculum. But first of all, you need to determine the why. Why is your child struggling? And I find that the reasons for the struggle fall under a few common headings. This is not an exhaustive list, but this is kind of, learning disabilities is the number one. These are your dyslexic kids, which affects your reading, children with dysgraphia, which affects writing, your auditory processing kids. Believe it or not, reading is an auditory skill. Your visual processing kids, the ability is there, but the disability is preventing them from breaking through. And so it's causing, you know, shredding of papers. Developmental delay. These are your kiddos with Down syndrome or other chromosomal gene issues or epilepsy like my little girl or fetal alcohol syndrome. Those are the things that are going to derail and cause children to have, you know, developmental delay. Autism spectrum disorder, and that is like a wide range. Autism is like from here to here, and so it's just each one is unique, but it is going to affect their learning, how they go into it. English is a second language, and we don't often see that on the list, but it really does have an impact. If you have a child like my children who have had to learn English as their second language, that's going to affect them. But the other thing that's affecting is if you speak two languages in your house. If you're bilingual in your home, that is actually going to affect your kids' reading and learning and writing. And even though it is a positive thing, you have to keep that in mind as you're bilingualing your kids. And I have taught a lot of kids that are bilingual who are first language is English, but the second language is another language. And mom's speaking that second language, and it is affecting their ability to process because their brain is processing two languages all the time. And so their reading, their writing, and all of that is going to be affected. And in the long run, it is a wonderful gift to give kids. But in the short run, it does have an impact. And of course, for kids that are learning English as the first time, then it's going to have a huge impact. And we have dealt with that in our family. ADD or ADD. Both of these are combined with other issues. They stand alone. You've got little kids that have trouble thinking, focusing. They're all over the place. That is going to affect their learning. Physical impairment, and this includes vision or hearing issues or physical disabilities that are going to impact their learning. Trauma. Trauma is huge. Any and all trauma derails a child's ability to concentrate. If your child is dealing with divorce, a death in the family, a recent move, a new baby, and yes, new babies derail a child's ability to think because they're dealing with processing, I'm not the person in line, whatever I am. Exposure to violence, a crisis, or anything. All these kids that are coming out of Ukraine, their ability to learn right now is just nil. And they might try to do school, but their brains are listening to rockets. Even if they're in safe places, those bombs bursting around them are having a severe effect. Trauma has impact. It is hard to concentrate when thoughts creep into a child's brain that bring up stress and fear. Even if a child has been moved to a safe place, even if they're in a safe environment, even if the trauma is, in your mind, gone, it's not gone for them. Electronics is on my list because electronics causes children to struggle. It is a factor in struggling. I have two children who literally lose their brains when an electronic is in the room. They're gone. They cannot do anything. They cannot think. They cannot concentrate on anything else. I have never seen anything take hold of a child's heart and mind like an electronic does. Hand one of those to a child who loves books and watch the love for books go out the window. I'm not going to solve all the whys in this one short lesson and session, and there's plenty of other sessions that do have some specific helps for the specific whys. I am going to say that if your child is struggling, get them tested. Find out what is wrong. I realize that some worry that, okay, if I get my child tested, then they're going to have a label, and that label is going to go with them, and everyone's going to think down of them or going to think bad of me, and so we don't want to get them tested. And I actually had heard a speaker say that one year, and I was just like jaw dropped because actually, honestly, I thought the same thing. I believed the same thing about my two older kids. I didn't want to get them tested because I was afraid of the label. In fact, I probably wouldn't have come to a session like this. You guys are brave. You're being real and honest about your kids, okay? It's hard to say, my kids are struggling, you know? Testing puts a label, yes, but what I've discovered with my three younger ones when I got them tested because I put pride aside and said, I need help, was that, wow, this testing has been so helpful. I now kind of have a clue why their brains are operating the way they are, and discovered that my two boys are, they're exact same age, and they, if you could put their brains together, we'd have a whole brain. But their brains are so opposite in the way they process and everything. It's like when you look at the testing, that's when it came out. I would never have known that. I would never have understood it or grasped it as well. The first way, where you start is with a physical. Okay, that's the first place to start with testing. Sometimes learning problems are actually health-related problems. So my oldest son went through a really rough time for a while, and we began to think he had some severe mental disabilities because he was doing all these behaviors that were just like, what is going on? He was about 10 years old, and he was just struggling in school and struggling. So I took him to the doctor because I thought, do I need to go like get a neuro test because he's doing tics and all this behavior? And I was scared. I was really worried about him. And she said, well, why don't we start with the allergist? And I looked at her and I'm like, but he doesn't have any allergies. He's just not allergic to anything. And she says, well, just humor me. Let's try the allergist first before we send him to a neurologist, you know, or a psychiatrist. And I was like, okay. So we got an appointment with the allergist. And come to find out that my poor little guy was allergic to everything out there. Everything. Mold, dust, da-da-da. But he had been allergic for so long and had been suffering for so long that he had hid it. It was just part of his behavior. And it wasn't until it was just starting to get worse and worse, like his allergies were getting worse, that we were starting to recognize that these tics were because he couldn't breathe. He was miserable. And he had had a constant headache, but we didn't know it because he didn't know how to say, I have a headache, because he never knew what not having a headache meant. Oh my goodness. And I'm a good mom. I was like, I was at home. I was homeschooling. I missed the clues. That was a total wide open learning lesson for me. And we started dealing with the allergies and started getting him calmed down, doing allergy shots. He was a different child. So his behaviors faded away. Once you rule out physical reasons, that's why you want to do physical reasons first, then you go with further testing. And so where do you go? The free option is public school. Be real honest, wasn't help for us. It's been a disaster every single time we've tried it. We've tried it several times with my younger kids. The other options for testing is you start at the doctor's office and you go to them and you say, look, I've got this, help me, direct me where I need to go. You can also go to the nearby university if you have one. You can contact them, their education department or their master's like speech program or anything like that. They love your kids. They loved my kids. That's where I went. I went to the university. I got them tested. We were able to do it through insurance, and they did therapy there. And the university students love them because they're learning, and I'm loving it because they're really good teachers are instructing their students how to work with your kids, and it was a win-win-win for us. So that was a good option. Learning Rx is a nationwide company that that tests and it works with memory, reading, and focus. Okay, so that's the testing that I did with my kids that showed me that their brains work opposite. LearningRx is a company that does testing. You don't have to do their program in order to get the testing. You can get their testing, and I think it's like $100 if you can go near one and get the testing done. And then you get a whole printout, and it gives you it's a really good place to start. And then you could possibly do help with them, but at least you've got some tools in your tool belt. The other thing that you can call the hospital, see what they have, and see what testing and services they offer. The other thing that we did was we went to the local eye doctor. Now, we didn't go just a regular eye doctor. We went to the one that had the vision therapist in the office. So vision therapy works with kids that they can see fine. They don't have any problems with their eyesight, but they have problems with the way that they're processing, their brain is processing what they see. And that was another eye-opening experience because we realized that both my boys had visual processing disorder that we picked up through the eye doctor. They were able to pick that up. So you've got to go to an eye doctor that has that vision part of it in there. So that was really helpful. Your state homeschooling groups, usually, like NCHE probably has connections to people, to organizations and all of that test. If trauma is one of the root causes that you know of, you can look back and you can look at your child and their circumstances. You go, yes, we just had a divorce in the family. This might be what's going on. Then get counseling. Please don't consider that to be like a terrible thing. Get your kids some help. Get them to work through that because that will kind of help ease the stress of what they're going through. There's no stigma in getting counseling for our kids. So this session is about tips and tricks for adapting curriculum. So I want to start with the elephant in the room. So those books that you've purchased, when we start at the beginning of the year, all that beautiful curriculum that you've got in piles all around, you might just have to toss out what you're using. You might just have to toss it. That typical curriculum that works for most, it might just be the worst option for you. I know that brings on the anxiety, the cost, the financial loss, but sometimes you have to know, you just got to get the elephant out. You just get to move them out of the room, okay? I have scrapped a lot of curriculum in my life. One size does not fit all when you're forcing a size 5 shoe into a size 10 foot. That's not going to work, okay? You're either going to have to cut off half the foot or you're going to have to throw away the shoe. My struggling to read child cannot handle a science program that requires a lot of reading. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. My child who is shredding math papers needs a gentler math program that includes manipulatives and visual cues and more repetition and simpler explanations. It is okay to toss a curriculum. It is okay. If you know in your heart of hearts this is not working, just sell it on eBay. But sometimes you can take what you have. And you can adapt it. And that's what, and so you sometimes can keep that elephant. You can keep them there and feed them and let them stay. And that's what this session is about, taking what you have and adapting it. So how can we adapt? How can we help our kiddos succeed? I'm going to give you a whole slew of tips and tricks that you can do to take your child's curriculum and adapt it to their needs. My focus is going to be on reading and math because those are the foundational tools. But much of what we cover in reading and math can work for other subjects. Keep in mind how most of us learn, and people come in 4 main learning types: visual learners, auditory learners, kinesthetic learners, and reading writing learners. And I've heard some people say this isn't true. I'm sorry, I've been a teacher for 40 years and I've seen this over and over and over and over again. Don't argue with me. Like, my kids are all of these. Okay, for struggling learners, these 4 main learning types are extremely important. What's interesting is that each of these learning types involves one of the senses. They involve a need to have one of the senses involved in order for them to learn. We all need to have our senses involved in our learning. Does your child love art, illustrations, have a good recall of people, words, and places? Are they interested in world and objects around them? Do they do best when they're shown stuff? That's your visual learner. Does your child love music? Love talking, humming, singing, making conversation? Does your child ask questions and needs to hear the instructions before starting a task? That's your auditory learner. Does your child write things down or take notes when working on a task? Do they love books and writing stories? They are good at remembering what they read. Do they like quiet and alone space? That's your reading, writing learner. Is your child a mover and a shaker? Do they have a hard time sitting while learning? Do they love hands-on activities? Do they listen while fidgeting? Do they brush through the instructions to get to what they're supposed to do? That's your kinesthetic learner. Is your child a little bit of this and a little bit of that? Because a lot of our kids are this, pieces of this and pieces of that. And you know, my kids are. They're strong in this, but they also have parts. You need to recognize that you need to teach your lessons to the senses. Hearing, seeing, touching, smelling, and tasting are important too. The more you can make your lesson sense learning, the better they're going to grasp what you're teaching them. It will meet all their needs for all their learning types. If you've got pieces of children and little pieces of this and that, the more you sense teach, then the more you're going to be able to reach them. I personally am a combo learner. I am not an auditory learner. I don't do well just listening and learning. If you're just going to sit here and lecture to me, I'm just going to be kind of blazed out. You can tell me your name 100 times, and I'm not going to remember it. I try so hard, and I can't. I'm not good. I have to see it. I have to see it, and then I have to see you, and then I have to see it, and then I'm going to get it. I need to read. I need to write things down. That's how I learn. Sensory learning is especially true in math. Sometimes children don't understand what they're to do. They just don't get it. You gave them the directions. You told them how to do that. You explained how to do the problems. You told them what to do. And your typical children, that's all they need. For most typical and above average kids, they're good, man. You give them those directions and they are off and flying, okay? But for your struggling or special learners, 10 minutes later you go back and they're just sitting there with their head on their desk, or they have completely gone off the bend and written wrong answers on every single problem just because they're trying to get through it. And I have had kids do that to me. Like, I'm just going to put in answers, you know? Frustration is really close at hand for them, for you, and for the child. So math needs to be taught in a variety of ways for our special learners. Verbally, they need to hear it. They need to see it in writing. They need it demonstrated. They need to get lots and lots of practice and much hand-holding over and over again, making sure they fully understand what it is before leaving them. This solves a lot of problems. And too often we just kind of go, well, this is easy. This is an easy problem. This is going to be easy. And we tell it and then blaze right on to the next thing and we've left them in the dust. Here are some other math problem solvers. Don't skip the first 20 lessons in the book. And I talked about this yesterday in my session. I don't care how easy they seem, especially for our struggling learners. They are in the book for a reason. Review is important. Feeling good about math is vital. We want our kids to feel good. Those first 20 lessons help a child remember what and build up their confidence. Don't rush those lessons. Take the same amount of time in the first 20 lessons as you would in the last 20 lessons. Okay, so my kids go to a hybrid Christian school homeschooling thing. I do some of their homeschooling at home, and they also go to school, so I get the best of both worlds. Their math teacher has taught special ed math forever. He has mostly typical kids, but my boys are in there and they struggle and math isn't their strength. They did Algebra 1 this year and they did not finish the book. So what? They did, I think, up to the lesson 60 out of 120. My kids learned those 60 lessons. They mastered them. My kids feel so good about Algebra 1 that they want to take Algebra 2. They were so excited. They loved it. It was such a good experience because he did not rush. He spent the time to teach each lesson. And if the majority of the, or if anybody in the class derailed on the lesson, he'd just do it again. And he kept doing it again until they did it. And then they would move on to the next one. And he did it slow and well done, so that my kids got to lesson 60 and they both came out of the class with A's and B's and they had mastered the material. And that's what matters. We're not in a rush to finish the book. The last 20, 30 lessons in the book are just going to look ahead to the next book anyway. They're just in there. You don't need to finish a math book. I know that's, you know what, in public school they don't. When I taught in school, I didn't. Never got through the book. You get through what you get through. If you can get through, so you're not looking at those first 20 lessons as we need to get through these fast so we can get to the last 20 lessons sooner, okay? You look at it like We're going to be in school from September until May, and we might not get to lesson 60, and that is okay for math. That's okay. We're just going to take our time. We're going to do it. We're going to enjoy it. We're going to learn it, and we're going to master it. Increase the time they have to work. Give them more time that they need. I'm not talking more like, okay, you're going to sit here for 2 hours today. That's not the time I'm talking. I'm talking days. And if it takes a couple of days or a week to learn it, then give them a couple of days a week. Cut down on the problems. Okay, I was really bad about this. Because I'm type A. If there was 20 problems in that book, I got to do 20 problems. Yeah, because we can't skip any because, my goodness, if we skip something, they're going to miss something, and then I'm going to, you know, be a bad mom. And so we had to do every page, and we had to do every problem. My poor oldest son. I apologize to him all the time. Please don't do that. You do not need to do every problem. That's something my little boys, they don't have to do every problem in the book, that in the chapter. They do half. They do sometimes a third. You know, they do the most important. So cut down on the problems that they have to do. Give choices. Let them pick the problems they want to do. Or take the chapter and split it in half and say, okay, this today we're going to do these problems. Tomorrow we'll do these problems. Give them choices. Say, which ones do you want to do today, odd or even? Or which problems do you think you need help with? Or which ones are you going to be the hardest for you to do? Let's work on those. And give your kids choices, because that kind of helps with the derailing of the math papers that are getting shredded, because you've given them a little bit of power that they need. Highlight in their books the rules. Oh, no. If I highlight, I can't sell the book on eBay. Right? So what? Go, because see, here's the problem. Especially when your kids get into older math, the higher up it goes, there's rules. Math rules, right? And so you tell the kid, well, a lot of math, like Saxon math, always tells you, you can go back to chapter 13 and find the rule for that problem. Child goes back to chapter 13, and chapter 13 has three pages in it of instruction. And this child hates math, but also probably might possibly have a reading problem too. And they're going to derail on that. They're going to go back to chapter 13 and look at it, and their eyes are going to swim. And even if they don't have a reading problem, it's still going to be overwhelming, because I got to read all that to figure out what the problem is, and I still got 10 more problems to do. And now you have just shred your paper. Okay. But if they can go back to chapter 13 and the rule is highlighted, how to do the problem is over there. So all I have to do is go back and find it. That makes it so much easier for them to be able to go back and figure out that chapter, so that the most important parts of that lesson are going to be fixed for them. Provide them math fact sheets. They can use like hundreds charts, multiplication and division charts, number lines, etc. Laminate them and give them to them. And you're thinking, but my child has to learn these. Yes, they do. But we're talking about struggling mathers, okay? And they need more props. They need them. We're not talking about average to above average kids who can learn these quickly. Your kids need props for that math. And so if you provide that for them and give them those props, they're going to eventually learn it as the time goes on, but they need those props. They need to be able to look and see. They need the help. And let them use them. So give them graph paper. Graph paper, here's two tricks. One, you can actually get graph paper that is like you can get big graph. And for your little ones, like kindergarten, first, second graders, if they have the graph paper, they can write their numbers better in them so that they're not. Because my one son was like this. You know, his handwriting was so bad. It was just, he had dysgraphia to the oomph. And so his words are like all over the place. And so his numbers. And so he can't even see what's lined up. So graph paper solves that problem because they have to put the number in the box. But it needs to be a big enough box. If you're trying to give them a little teeny tiny box and you've got a child with fine motor skills, and that's going to be a problem. You need to find the graph paper, or you can make it yourself. You can make graph paper on your computer. Make it so that they can fit the number in, and that lines their problems up, and it makes it so much easier for them to do their problems. It's so much easier. The other option that you can do is you can take their paper that looks like this, and you can turn it sideways. Okay? Take their lined paper and turn it, because now they've got lines like this, and it emulates the lines on, you know, for a problem, so they can write them, and you can even draw lines for them, and they can draw a line, but this turn this way makes it a little bit easier to do a math problem. So say, okay, we're going to turn our papers horizontal instead of vertical, and that's how we're going to do our math from now on. So that helps. Read their word problems with them. Word problems are one thing that derail our special learners like hugely. It does for me. My kids, word problems are like My processing kids, those word problems, man, they just, you have to explain them, okay? And I know you go, well, but they've got to eventually learn them. Yeah, but you know what? Kids that are struggling with math, a lot of them are not going to go on and go to college. They need the props. They need the help. They need to process those word problems. So I always go, okay, we read it, and then do you understand it? Can you tell me this word problem in your own words? What is it saying? What are you supposed to do? And I help them process what it is that they're supposed to do. And usually there's only one or two word problems in a chapter, in a lesson, but that is an awesome way to help them process. Provide a math buddy. If you've got a struggling math student, you can match them up with an older brother or sister who can help them while they work. Let them sit next to that. Do you have multi-age and you've got an older brother that can help? Then let them sit next to them and give them some props. Hey, bud, let's line that up better. Or, you know, I think you missed that here. Or if you have a grandpa or grandmom in the house, that's really awesome. So let them get up and move after a certain number of problems. Please do not make them sit there forever and ever. Amen. Okay, if they've done 5 problems, let's go take a break. Maybe let's go do some reading now. Let's go do something different now. We'll come back to this. You do not have to sit there, because if you're struggling with math and you have to sit there for all that time, it just kills the heart. So get a break. Go run around the house. Go, you know, allow a calculator. And again, okay, so I'm the worst math person in the world, and I have a calculator on my phone. I use it all the time. I confess, I do not solve problems anymore in my head. I did learn my multiplication tables, my addition, subtraction, but once I got to a certain age and I grew up, I didn't have to use them anymore. I use a calculator. Do y'all use calculators? Or is anyone here just like this, and they could just pop that in? You can? My husband can. Smack him in the head. I can't. So I use a calculator. Why don't we give that as a prop to our kids? Once you kind of teach them those multiplication, division, addition, subtraction problem things, once they get to a certain point, give them a calculator. Let them use it. That's a help. Repeat the lesson. And I said that before, but if a child has not mastered that subject, please do not go on to the next one. Do it again. Don't plow forward. Repeat the problems. And you don't need to finish the book. That's a hard one for all of us type A, but you do not need to finish that book. So let's jump to reading, because math and reading are your foundational tools. If your child is struggling to read, here are some tips and tricks for helping them with reading, learning to read. This is for learning to read, okay? So we're going to do learning to read and already reading but struggling to read, okay? So to learn to read, you want to focus on phonics. And you want to start with your letter sounds, not the letter names. And this is a confusion that people have, and this is one thing that gets children confused. So we teach them A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and they learn to, that letter, that word said, that thing, that symbol says A, and then we want them to learn the A. And that's confusing. And then we teach them the B, and now we want to teach them that that's a B, a B, okay? Better to start with, if you've got littles and you're starting out, start with, it's A, B, C, D, and you focus on the sounds. You focus on the sounds, not the name of the letter. The name of the it doesn't matter. If it's a B, there's no B sound. There's nothing that says B. Buh, there is an A sound, but that's when you get to long vowels, and you don't get to long vowels for a while. So, and they're gonna learn it by Sesame Street. Your focus when you're doing your learning with the kids is the sound of the letter, not the name of the letter. And that's something that's hard for people, because we go, what's this letter A? Okay, they can learn to read. No, they don't know the name of it. The name of the letter is different than the sound of the letter, and that's something that people have a really hard time with. Find songs that teach the letter sounds. I'm a big one on music. Music is an awesome way to teach our kids, and especially for your kids. Anything you can do with music, do it. Do it, do it, do it. There's so many sa-sa-sa-sa songs that you can teach them and that they can listen to. Practice, 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 and that just goes without saying. Expect your time is going to be doubled or tripled to reach mastery for each skill, okay? And teach one thing at a time. You're not trying to drown your kids. You're going to review. You're going to go through your house, and you're going to label everything. And this is a huge thing. You go through your house, and you label everything in your house. This is door, D-O-O-R, sink, and you just put little laminated labels all over your house. Why? Because they help kids learn to read, but they also help kids with the first letter of the sound of sounds. S for sink, sink. D for door, the door. And you can point it out. You can point those words out. They're going to pick up those words. My parents used to put Bible verses all over our walls. I know so many Bible verses because I just read them. They're there. You just kind of scan them. You just scan them. Same thing with words on the door. They know that's a window, and all of a sudden the word window is right there. That's why in classrooms they put words on everything. Put words on everything. If your kid is struggling to read, put words on everything. Everything should have a name. Chair, door, window, floor, ceiling. They can look up. There's the word ceiling. What does the ceiling start? Start with a C. That's a funny word. That letter C says S and K, and you know, and so you've got lots of discussions that can go. Shorten lessons. Shorten your lessons for reading. You're not, don't, please, again, you've got struggling kids. You don't want to just sit there and you're going to do this and you're going to sit here and learn all this. Make your lesson short. Teach to the senses. Touching, smelling, tasting, anything you can do to get the kids touching it. If you're learning those letters, then they're doing it in shaving cream. They're playing with Play-Doh. They're doing it in sand. They're doing all kinds of things that get them touching and feeling those letters. Your child probably won't read at age 4. I'm sorry. Most of your kids aren't going to read at age 4. That's normal. Your child may not learn to read at age 5. That's okay. If your child's not reading and you're in here because you think your child is struggling, it's normal. Most 5-year-olds don't learn to read. Your child may not learn to read at age 6. Again, that's actually normal. In fact, most of the world don't even start teaching reading until age 7. In most of the world, they don't start formal reading, formal school, until the children are 7 years old. Your child may not learn to read at age 8. That's normal. That's okay. A lot of kids that don't learn to read till age 8 do no worse than their peers when they're older. It's okay. You just go with their pace. If your child is still not reading at age 8 or 9 or 10 or 11, just keep plugging away. Okay, so I know personally, I just got a call from a lady, and this is so cool story. So I taught this little boy. He was in my history and writing classes, 2 different classes that I teach. He was 10 years old, 9 years old when I got him, first of all, and he couldn't read a word. Could not read, did not understand reading, he knew no letters. He could not do anything. And he was one of six, the youngest of 6 kids. His mom had homeschooled all of them. All the others were fine, all the way up into high school and college, okay? And here's this little guy. And he's lost. She is just tears raining. What do I do? And so she put him in my writing class. He can't write. He doesn't know how to write the letters. He doesn't know anything, but he can dictate. He was a smart little guy. So he would write all of his, he would tell his mom all the things that he wanted to write, and she would write them for him, and he'd come in, and I would read them for him. And so he got through my classes that way. Couldn't read. 9 years old, 10 years old, couldn't read. 11 years old, couldn't read. He was in my classes, could not read. 12 years old, couldn't read. I didn't have him anymore. COVID hit, didn't have him in my class. I got a call from her a couple months ago. He's now 14. Had not read, could not read at the beginning of the year. 14 years old, had never read. She had done testing, took him to public school. Public school blamed her, said, "You must be doing something wrong. You have to put him in here so we can fix him." She's like, "No, she's like, "I have done everything. We have taken him to specialists. We have done training. We have done, da, da, da. He's just not learned to read." And never learned to read, 14 years old. Started at the beginning of the year. And it was like all of a sudden, within a couple weeks of the school year starting, a light bulb went on. Just turned on for him. And all of a sudden, all the lessons that they had been doing for 14 years just clicked. And she called me to tell me, "Luke is almost to grade level." In that period of time, just boom, 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 boom. And from September until she called me in March, he's almost to grade level. So you can't just go, "Oh, no, my kid is," you have to give it time. I have a little girl who's special needs. She's 11. She's the one with the helmet. Running around the convention center. I got to bring her this weekend, which is really fun. She's not reading, but she knows all her letter sounds. She knows she knows a billion songs. She can tell you, she could tell you every single word of every single book that we read. She knows them all. She knows all her stories. She knows all that, but she has not jumped the hurdle. And we know that her language area and her brain is damaged because of the epilepsy, because she has severe epilepsy. We're talking like on the bottom of the line spectrum. We deal with seizures all the time. I was up at 5 o'clock this morning trying to keep her from going into status. So we're talking severe epilepsy, which has damaged parts of her language, so she has a hard time speaking. I know she's going to read one day. I don't think she's ever going to read to the point of being on, fourth or fifth grade level, but she loves books so much, and it is such a big deal to her, and the tools are being given to her that I think just one of these days, her little brain, one of these days, the circuits in there are just going to reroute the damage, and it's going to hit, because she's got all the tools, and she's right there on the cusp, and I know that in a couple year, she's going to do it. She's right there. And it's so cool to watch. And I know I'm going to be able to say one day she did it. You know, so if your kids are struggling, don't give up and say, well, this isn't going to happen, because I know that it can. It just takes time. If you have a struggling reader, so we're working on learning to read, but now you have a child who can read, but they hate to read, or their reading is slow and cumbersome, or they stumble through the words, here's some of my tips. Bag the schedule. If your curriculum has a certain amount of books, of time a child should read a book, throw it out. Skip the schedule. That's not going to happen for your kid. Give your child the time he or she needs to read a book, or to read a chapter, or to read a paragraph, or to read whatever they need. Just bag it. You're not bound by a schedule. There's no rules that you have to follow. Decrease the number of books to read. You're not obligated to read every book in that curriculum box that you bought. You do not. Your child does not have to read all those books. They don't. Okay. I have one who's in 11th grade, and reading is abysmal. Okay. I got him when he was 11. They never taught him anything. Actually, they did try to teach him, but he hated reading when he was in Ukraine. And he did everything in his power to avoid ever having to learn. So when I got him at 11, he was like, never learned his own language except on a kindergarten level. And so now I hear him at 11 and he just hates it. He hates it. And he would be embarrassed if I told him to do that, but he does. And it's the reality. And he can read, but he is OCD. And this is if your child is OCD, it might just be one of the reasons why it's affecting your kid's reading. And it took me a long time to figure that out, because he's very OCD. And when he reads, he wants to read perfectly. So he looks at every word, and it must be pronounced in his brain and out of his mouth exactly. So if he hits words that he doesn't know, then he's going to stumble on those words because he has to say them exactly. And it is very hard for him to read with any fluency, because his OCD is affecting his reading pluses, and that's causing him to hate the reading because he can't get over that hump. So we've had to decrease the number of books for him to read. And we've also done the next one, pick easier books. There's no way he's going to read high school level books. No way. No way he can read middle school level books. He's not there. So we pick books that are on the third and fourth, fifth grade level for him, but we pick good quality ones. We pick ones that are not going to be demeaning, that are really good books, that are going to be fun to read, and that's what he reads. And he doesn't love them, but he doesn't hate them either. We've gotten through books this year. He's read about 5 or 6 books, and they were books that he enjoyed, that were on his level, and that worked for him. So you do not have to stick with their grade level. And that is something that parents think, I have to do. I've got to stick. If my child is in third grade, they must read third grade books. Says who? You're the homeschool mom. If those picture books are going to excite them, then get the picture books. Go with the easier books. Just drop down grade levels. Provide a basket of books, though. Okay, so put a basket of books in a prominent place in your house and fill it with all kinds of interesting picture books, nonfiction books, those encyclopedia type books. So one year, this family that we know that had gazoozles amounts of kids, they were actually moving to Italy. Okay, and they homeschooled for years and years, and they were getting rid of everything. And we were a co-op, and they decided to donate everything to the co-op. Okay, so all of their entire library of books. So all these kids, I taught most of these kids, they come in there with these big boxes of books and just dragging them in and dropping them. And these parents are like, it's a feeding frenzy, man, because this is free. And we're just like, get out of my way as we go diving in to go after all these books, right? And so I grab, you know, probably tossing out a few people myself, I grab a bunch of those encyclopedia type books that are really fun. Like, I think one of them was space, with all the big pictures and not a lot of words, but really interesting. And I think I can't remember what the other one was. Dinosaurs. I grabbed a couple of them, and I went home, and I just put them on the counter. Didn't say anything. Just stuck them on the counter. And my boys came home, and they saw them, and they're like, oh, what are these? I said, these are for you guys. You can have them. And they grabbed them. They took them upstairs. They put them in their bedroom. So when they had our quiet reading time, that's what they looked at. And when I went in the bedroom that night, they're both showing me the books. Now, the one likes to read. The other one hates to read. The one that hates to read is looking at that book, looking at the pictures, reading a little bit of it, showing it to me, so excited. That's what a basket of books does. and you change out those books. So you give them lots and lots of books to read. No pressure. Not you have to go read those. Just a basket of books. Let them help choose the books that they have to read for the year. If they are supposed to read a certain amount of books for a curriculum, especially if they're older, let them choose. Our curriculum that we have is a history literature curriculum. We've got lots of books lists. You give that book list to the kids. You pick your favorite book in this unit, and you that's one we'll get. And let them choose, because children that choose. When I was in high school, and all of those teachers made me read a certain book, those were the books I hated. We don't like to read the books that we're supposed to read, right? Are y'all different? I'm the only one. I was the one that hated every book my teacher told me I had to read, and I loved every book that I wasn't supposed to read. You know, or they were like, it's not good for you, or you're not going to read this. Those are the ones I read. And our kids are the same way. They tend to want to pick their own, and let them. Establish a quiet reading time in the day. Establish a time in the day where the whole house shuts down. Nobody is doing anything for our struggling readers. They desperately, desperately need that. My little boy, who doesn't like to read, I call him my groundhog, because he is like constantly popping up. What's going on? What's going on? And if there's anything going on in the house, I might as well just take his book and put it in the trash can, because it's not going to happen. But if everything's quiet, if his brother is reading, if we're quietly reading to Mary and nobody else is doing anything else, and he pops out his little head looking down to see if anything's going on, nothing's going on, well, then what's he going to do except maybe possibly concentrate on the book, right? If you shut your house down, if you have things going on, I guarantee you that child is not going to read. It has to be quiet. And if you can't do that, then find them a place where they can go that is going to be total distraction-free, where it's just a zone, a place that's closed in, that this is a closet with a pillow and a flashlight, and this is your quiet place. Close the door, go in there and read anything that can allow them to read without distraction. Have them read for short periods of time instead of long time. 15-minute segments during quiet reading times, provide breaks even. Read for 15 minutes. You can color. You can play with your little blocks or a little fidget spinner, and then you can read 15 minutes more. Just do whatever you can to break it up. Have the struggling reader read out loud. So both of my adopted boys read out loud. They just both do. That's just required. And that's hard. It took a long time to get them to do that. It was like a battle. But that was a battle worth fighting. I am so glad I fought that battle. By making them read out loud, number one, my OCD one that has trouble with fluency, reading out loud forces him to go through the words, forces him to. And because he also has ADD, reading into in his head ain't gonna happen. He does not even, if he was reading, he has no idea what he read. He has no clue what he read. Reading out loud helps him to process, helps him to get the words out, and it helps him to remember and retain what he read. From my child that can read, but that struggles with processing and with understanding what he's reading about, reading out loud helps him to learn the story better. And so he reads out loud. Listen to audiobooks. Audiobooks are a huge, great option. I have them look at the audiobook, listen to the audiobook with the book in front of them so they can read along with it and they can follow the words. Not necessarily they're going to do it. My one that likes to read usually does. My one that doesn't pretends he is. But okay, at least we're getting a story in, right? At least we're trying. Have them read along with the audiobook. This is better. So you can take the audiobook and you can turn it down to the slowest speed, and then have them read along with it. And again, this was a huge, wonderful thing for my one who doesn't like to read. Having him read out loud with the audiobook and read it loud. I don't let him mumble. Because I need to hear you. I want to hear you read. I want to hear the story. Mom wants to hear the story. I want to know what's going on. And so we're reading it out loud with the audiobook slowed down. If as we get better, you can speed it up to normal speed, but start out really slow so that they can, and it helps them. It actually helps fluency. It helps them stay with it. It helps them keep from just getting stumbled because they're trying to keep up. So they might have to skip a word or two, but it really helps. And it has made a huge difference in his reading completely. Record them while they're reading. Take your phone or whatever and let them read out loud and then record it. And then let them listen to them. That's fun. That's like an audiobook. They're making their own. And then they can listen and they can hear what they're doing. And kids love doing that. And it's one way to encourage them to want to read. Read the book on a device. Okay, sometimes kids gauge better when it is on a Kindle or iPad, and I'm just so not an electronic person, but if your kid does better with it on an iPad, then go for it, especially if it helps them to be able to blow the words up so that they can see better. So if I can take my little fingers and blow those words up and make them bigger on the screen, then if that helps, then do that. But make sure that's all they're doing, of course. Okay, here's what I love to do. I love to read with my own book with my kids. So every night, especially with Mary, I read to her a little bit, and then I get my book out, and we lay there and read together. And she pretends to read her book while I sit there and read mine, and she loves that. The other day, my husband was going to read to her, and she told Papa to go away. She said, "Go away, Papa. Mama's going to read to me," because she knew I was going to read with her, and she loves that part of it. She loves to sit there cuddled up next to me, and we're just reading together. That is a very precious thing. And sometimes I do that with the boys. I'll go in there and curl up on their bed with them while they're reading, and they love that. They love that you're reading, I'm reading, we're just doing it together. And you can also read the book with them. Have them read a chapter, you read a chapter. That's a really great thing to do. If they're in high school and they need to read the full version of a book, read the Cliff Notes, but that's cheating. No, it's not. Cliff Notes are there for help to know what's in the book, okay? Cliff Notes are your help to know what's going to the book is about. With our curriculum, we have a high school level text, and we have a younger kid's text, and our younger kids is on audio. We haven't put the high school level on audio. It's down the road, but hasn't been done yet. So I just tell people, listen to the younger kids' audio, because it's the abridged version. So if you listen to the abridged version, and that's what my kids did this year, my two, they listened to the abridged version, and they read the high school text, and that was good. So read, if you're reading a full book, and if they have to, like especially in their middle school and high school, then have them listen to the abridged or unabridged version of it first, so that they can listen to it first or even after, so that they have a clue what they're reading, because a lot of times the concentration of reading the words and the concentration of trying to remember what the story is about are two very different skills that it makes it hard for struggling readers. So if you can at least listen, and then that kind of helps them learn what it's about, so then we can just concentrate on the reading. So what about workbooks, answering questions, testing, all of those things? How can you adapt those? How can we remove the stress for our strugglers in terms of doing workbooks? Okay, number one, decrease the number of questions. They do not have to answer every question in that workbook. They don't have to answer everything. Number two, read. So this is what I do. We read short. If we have to answer questions, we have to read a chapter, and we have to answer questions from that chapter. We just read short sections of that chapter. We'll read the first couple paragraphs or the first page, however much they can handle, and then those are the questions we answer that day, just those. And then we go back and we read the next part, and then we go answer those questions. And we go back and read the next part, and we answer those questions. So we've broken it up and made it easier for them, so they're not having to retain the whole thing at the very end. Answer the questions while they're reading. Have them have it open. And as they get look at the question. There's the question. Now I'm going to read, and I'm going to have the question there. And that helps the kids stop, and also gives them a break in their reading, because they're reading a little bit, and then they're answering, and they're reading and answering it. If doing the subject as a family, answer the questions together. Just do them as a family. If you're doing history together or science together, which is what I really push people to do, then you can answer those questions together as a family. You're not making it one child sitting there trying to do a workbook questions and by themselves. Let them dictate their answers instead of having to write it. Because again, a lot of our kids struggle to write as much as they struggle to read. So give any opportunity they can to just tell me what the answer is. My one son is really good at reading, but he has a very hard time verbally processing, auditory processing, and language disorder. And so putting the answer down, he knows the answer. He knows it. He knows it cold, but he can't tell me what it is. He can't answer it. He's struggle for him to verbally tell me. So when he reads the question, he doesn't even get the question. It's kind of gone over him. So we have to, what's the question? And then I'll help him, or I'll rephrase it. Oh, that's that. And then he'll start telling me the answer. And a lot of times the answer is in his own words. So it's a funny version of what he read, but I know he knows what he read. He just can't verbalize it in exactly, and that's okay. He's just given me the answer. Check plus on that one. Hooray, you know it. This is what one family does. They put sticky arrows next to the answers in the book. So mom goes through the book. They look through all the questions. They know exactly what the kid's going to come, what's going to come up, and they take those little post-it sticky arrows and they just stick it on there. So now the kid's not going to derail. They know this is highlight. It's like a highlight, 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 but you're not actually marking in your book. Here's a fun thing you can do. You can go take the answer key and you can cut up all the answers, cut the answers off the answer key into pieces, and then you can have the child paste those answers into the question. So it's like a little matching, which makes it fun. So I've got the question over here. Now I've got it. I can match my answers to my question. So that gives them something to do. That's again, it's a kinesthetic way of doing the questions. In terms of testing, you can do open book tests. You can decrease the questions. You can highlight test questions in the book. You can highlight test questions in their study guide. So you can go through your study guide and say, this is what you're going to be tested on, instead of telling them everything. You can take the test orally. You can have them just tell me what the answers are. Can you auditorily tell me, language-wise, tell me what this test is. You can rephrase the question for them, which is what I do with my one child, or you can skip the test. You don't have to test. If it's a subject, especially that you look, and you don't really even have to start testing until eighth grade, please, if your kids are in seventh and under, there is no reason for you to be testing your kids. If you want to teach them how to take a test, then that's one thing. But if you're doing a test to count for grade, and it is a good tool to teach kids how to take a test. That is one area where homeschoolers kind of tend to be to fail or to struggle with is because we tend to throw out the test completely, and then kids go to a public high school or a Christian high school, or they go to college or a community college, and all of a sudden they're having to take tests, which they never really did that much of. And that's kind of a whoops, we didn't really prepare them for that very well, because we tend to throw out the test completely. So if you want to teach children how to take a test, how to do multiple choice, how you can use Quizlet to make things like that, you know, how to do short answers, how to do all of that. That's why doing workbook sheets like our questions are good. Just help them, give them lots of props to do it. But you can also skip the tests. And in seventh and under, don't do tests. Eighth and up, if they're going to college, then yeah, they're going to need to take the tests. But you can also have them write a summary, or you can have them write a report, or you can do something different, or you can grade their workbooks. You can do something different to avoid those tests. Finally, unplug the electronics. Electronics are brain-sucking, mind-numbing, reader-robbing devices that steal your child's joy in reading away from them. How can a book compete with the fast and amazing images of an electronic? Especially for your boys, but also for your girls. Whether it's a phone or a gaming device, they are brain robbers. Some of you have wisely kept your kids away from electronics. I applaud you. Some of you battle daily with them. I feel your pain. Okay. In our home, we have devices. We do. Our policy is during the school year, from September until now. The electronics is only on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and they're earned. You know, you don't do this, you lose your hours. But Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we do no electronics. We do nothing. We don't do anything. We don't do TV or now we don't, because I have two that just derail. They just derail. If television's an option, they're gone. If an electronic is an option, they're gone. So Monday through Thursday, and that takes away so much pressure. Electronics should not be a reward. If an electronic is your reward, then your kid is going to sit there and all they're going to think about is how I'm going to design my Minecraft castle thing that I'm working on, or how I'm going to beat so-and-so in so-and-so such and such game. That's what their brain is going to be doing. Please don't think that that's not true, because it is. They are going to be thinking that. If your electronic is your reward, then you're going to be sitting there fighting that beast, because it's in their brain. If you just take it out of the room, say, you know what, for this next year, we're going to try something different. We're going to try to not have our phones or our games or anything. We're going to do different things. We're going to go on walks, and we're going to get some other things. We're going to buy blocks. We're going to do anything we can to not do the electronic from Monday to Thursday. And then on the weekends, yeah, we'll let up a little bit. We'll do them if you have them, but not during the week. That will help. That helps ease. It does for me. It helps ease. It makes it less. I don't have to battle it. I don't have to deal with it. They know not to ask, because the answer is just no, 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 no. And after about the third or fourth week of no, they just quit asking, because it's no. You know, so why ask? I'm just going to go outside, go play. Go. We got a trampoline. We have swing set. We have, you know, a bunch of sticks and rocks out there. They can go dig and to their heart's delight, sandbox, all those things. Go out, go play, go bikes, go do. And just try to unplug them. I realize that as your kids get older, the electronics are going to be more important. So you just have to find ways to limit and control it. Slow your schedule down. If it takes a year and a half to get through something, it takes a year and a half. Break from the schedule. If it's not working, do something different. If it's you know, or throw it out or try something new. Be free to stray if your child is interested in a subject. If your little struggler is interested in something, then go with, by all means, get on their train and go with them. Do what you can to follow their heart, because that will make it so much easier to direct their thoughts and to teach them and encourage them. When it's reluctant reader or reluctant math, child is interested in something, then you can turn and make math and reading go with whatever they're doing. As you teach them, remember that teaching them with his words of praise in their hearts, they are God's created treasure. Praise them in whatever they do. Praise them. We are so quick to, oh, you just wrote that wrong. I'm going to put the red circle, the red X, all of that. We need to be instead finding check marks and pluses and smiles on the, you got that right. Yes, smile. The ones that are wrong, we're going to try these again. Not marking the ones that are wrong, just trying them again and doing everything we can to protect the heart, protect their spirits, because they're fragile. Our kids look tough on the outside, but they're fragile on the inside. They know they're struggling, so we've got to protect them. Praise them in their efforts. You did so well. I know you didn't get that right, but you tried so hard. If they, you know, reward them. Find 100 ways. My friend, whose little boy didn't start reading until she was 14, he would cry. Honey, you're going to get this. I promise you one day you're going to get this. This is going to happen for you. You are smart. You are brave. You are good. And he did. You know, maybe not to your highest, maybe, you know, but our kids are going to, they're going to shine. In some area or another, they're going to shine. And we just have to find those areas of shine and go with it. So I hope this was helpful. Thank you for coming. I do have a booth. We do have curriculum. We actually have an entire section on our website called Tips and Tricks, and it's how to adapt our curriculum for special learners, actually for gifted kids and for special learners, because gifted kids are also special learners. They have their whole different gamut of issues. And so you can take all of our material and you can adapt it for your kids, which is really fun. And we're actually working on writing a book to go with it, so you can actually get all that information in a book. So thank you for coming, and God bless.